Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host this morning. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews. My guest today is a music lover and also an author, John Cherry. Good morning, John.
Simon, good to talk to you. Always a pleasure.
It's been a while since we last talked. Several months, I think.
Right. Good to be back with you.
Maybe we could start with a little background for our listeners. Who is the infamous John Cherry?
Well, I am an author now of three books. The ones I think we're going to kind of focus on today are my second book, which is titled Better Than Lennon, The Music and Talent of Paul McCartney. And I already hear the Lennon fans getting upset. And then the second one is Paul McCartney's solo music career, 1970 to 2010, Life, Love, and a Sense of Childlike Wonder. So obviously you can tell I'm a McCartney fan first, the Beatle fan as well, of course. And, I'm happy to discuss. Actually, I was at a grocery store yesterday, and I was wearing a shirt, my Better Than Lennon T-shirt, and a lady at the deli counter jumped on me about my shirt. So I do recognize that it causes some controversy, but I plead with the Lennon people, please read the book, and I'm happy to discuss anything with them. But I think that maybe that they'll see where I'm coming from when I use that title, and it was more out of love than it was to try to denigrate John.
Right. When you're not writing, what do you do? Are you full-time employed or? How do you fill your days?
Well, I do some writing when I'm motivated. Working on a follow-up to my very first book, which I know you've read, called the title was War on Us, How Policies and People Are Destroying America, where I get into kind of all, well, just a hodgepodge of all different types of subjects, probably something for everybody in that. So I'm working on a follow-up to that book. I'm a somewhat regular golfer, at least maybe once or twice a week. In this beautiful, I live in Southwest Florida, so I enjoy the sunshine a bit, and exercise, take care of my house and yard, and read a lot, and always collecting material and research for future books and or present book that I'm writing. So, stay in touch with friends in North Carolina, where I'm originally from, and that fills up the day pretty easily.
let's talk about books. Your Better Than Lennon book certainly sparked some controversy. In fact, we had a pretty lively round table about it here on Blog Talk Radio. When you were writing it, did you think that it was going to create this controversy?
No, not as much as it ended up doing, probably because my original premise was I just kind of thought that Paul had been slighted over the years, not directly by John, because, John, I think, was somewhat made a martyr by the assassination, which was horrific, obviously, and I think maybe I just kind of thought maybe Paul needed to, maybe somebody needed to write and defend him a little bit in all of this, because I don't think he likes to do it himself. He does it in small doses every once in a while, but not very much. And I just kind of thought, well, somebody needs to say this. So I said, okay, well, how do I present this? And if I'm going to say, how do you really rate Paul, or what would you say about him? I couldn't think of anybody better as far as their accomplishments and their talents than John. So it was not an attempt to criticize John really too much, even though, of course, there is some of that, as I also criticize Paul. I think, as you have said, I think I'm pretty objective, even if I do love something. And so when I wrote it, that title just came to mind, more so really out of respect totally to John, but also to say, and I think make the case in my book, that Paul was more accomplished both commercially and overall talent-wise. And I think one premise that also that people seem to miss is the Beatles voted as a group to release whatever singles were released, what was going to be the A side and the B side. and of course the A side being the lead part of the single. And of all the singles that you know that were released, Paul had a clear majority, as is noted in the book, of number ones, both in number of weeks at number one and number of songs at number one. So while some people will claim that commercial success doesn't necessarily mean that something is better than something else, which I do understand a portion of what they're saying there, I think I made the case pretty strongly in that aspect of comparing the two alone. So it wasn't, again, at all. Now, as you know, there were criticisms of John in there and also of Yoko, appropriately, and I wasn't hesitant to really to criticize either artist because they both had their low points as well. So tried to take it from a very objective standpoint, but also I think the case was made, and I stick with what I said. I don't back down at all, and that's sort of why I also followed up Better Than Lennon with a story about Paul's solo career to really almost really sort of emphasize in more detail why I thought Paul was the superior artist.
I would imagine that you must have received some pretty interesting emails about Better Than Lennon.
Well, one guy said it's sad that John and Martin Luther King and President Kennedy aren't still on the earth, and I am. So that was probably the most, I guess. I said, okay, well, you know, just from a little book that I wrote, wow. You know, I still say probably overall, and I know you probably, you know, saw some of the responses on your site that that it probably was more favorable towards the book than against it. So I felt somewhat vindicated by that. And also general reviews of the book. You know, it's been people have understood what I was saying and I think where I was coming from. And that's all I really ask. You know, you make your argument fine. I mean, or write your own book.
Actually, that quote that you came out with, you really should have used that, you know, on the back cover. You know what readers are saying about Better Than Lennon.
yeah, that's true. I should have. You know, again, yeah. I mean, so if somebody wants to come up, you know, with Better Than McCartney, then you know, that's fine. Write it and make your case, and we'll see what they say. And if they can make their case, then so be it. I don't think they can, but you know, go for it.
Your second book is not so controversial. You basically look at Paul McCartney's solo career. You cover quite a wide time span. It runs from what, 1970 to pretty much present day.
Yeah, his whole career. Some of that was. The one negative review I got was that I didn't go into enough song detail in the Better Than Lennon, and I kind of thought I understood what they were saying and I appreciate it, but I kind of thought that would have lost the focus if I had gone too much into just song detail rather than making the case of what it was, that Paul was a superior artist. And so I decided, I'll give this person what they want, and also it'd be a fun book to write. And you know, I think, again, in both books, I think I was objective. When I didn't like one of Paul's songs or albums, I clearly laid that out in the book. There weren't that many, but there were some. And, you know, he had his low points. John had his low points. And, you know, so I wanted to lay that out. And I think in discussions you and I have had over the last several months, I think it really is it's interesting to see, one, who he played with and all over all these years. And, you know, a wide variety of very terrific artists. And also to see that how some of the songs were developed, where they came from, what the influences are, how he felt about them, how the reviewers at the time felt about it. So a lot of depth there for any sort of McCartney fan or historian of music to look at that and see what they could find out about the songs.
One thing became clear to me, and, you know, I can't profess to being the, you know, the world's greatest Beatles fan, so... You know, I really didn't follow, you know, McCartney and Lennon very closely after the, you know, the Beatles broke up. But, you know, hindsight being what it is, it's wonderful. You know, it's 2020. It is clear that, as a whole, you know, the Beatles were very cohesive musically. When they split, both Lennon and McCartney it seemed to enter what could almost be viewed as a twilight zone. I mean, they seemed to have some truly not very good stuff.
Right, and I think it was if you look back on it really in depth, I think it was the product of several things. One, not working with the other had to be a big change. And right after the Beatles, some of Paul's worst music was, you know, in the year or two after that they had broken up, and I think he was somewhat of an emotional wreck. And also in both cases, you know, you're following the Beatles, which can't be easy if you really get that in your mind. And I'm sure, you know, it's hard to block that out, that you're going out there solo. And wait a minute, where's the rest of the group? That's hard to follow as well. But I think John's low points, I think, were somewhat due to Yoko's influence, some due with some depression and some problems with drugs and things like that that also affected him. But I think he missed, and there were, unfortunately, it never came to be, but there were at least three or four times in the 70s where the two of them were really, really close to getting back together to at least write songs. And that would have been terrific, I think, if that had happened. Actually, all the way up till the day before, I think, John got shot, that Paul was trying to reach John at that point and was blocked by Yoko, which doesn't seem fair because Paul, you know, the story is Paul helped get them get back together after John and Yoko's year and a half separation. So I think it was more of what they were going through at the time, and obviously every artist, any, you know, without those influences has their low points, but they definitely had them. You know, some of Paul's stuff just almost sound like he made it up on the spot, and in some cases he did, I think, in the studio. And John's stuff, I think he sort of got caught up in the protest movement and started writing songs for whatever reason for those people instead of writing songs that were his, his true feelings, which I think normally is the way that he wrote songs, very successfully in most cases.
I want to ask you a question. About 2 weeks ago, I read a book that was written by a spiritualist, you know, one of these seers into the future, and it got me thinking. You know, probably the best known prophet, if you will, is Nostradamus, and yet, you know, much of what Nostradamus wrote was pretty bloody nebulous. And, you know, people, scholars, if you will, you know, have labored for years to make Nostradamus's words fit the history books. You know, they rarely do you hear someone say, "Oh, on July 1st, something bad's going to happen," because, you know, Nostradamus, you know, says, you know, rather it's something bad happens, and then people go back and, you know, make the Nostradamus facts fit the real facts. Now, there is a point to this. One of the things that I have heard from numerous sources, yourself included, is this kind of running battle between Lennon and McCartney. You know, that there are, you know, little fragments of songs that, you know, supposedly are references to one or the other. Do you really think that they were waging, you know, this sort of running battle, or, you know, are we just reading things into song lyrics?
I think some of the songs that have been referenced as part of the battle have, were not meant to be part of that. There was times, particularly in 1971, where Paul and John were going at each other pretty hard lyrically, and it was pretty clear what was going on then at the time. But I think it's probably been expanded into some other songs, at least what you read about what Paul would say about his songs and John as well, that the songs were not about that battle. But I think what a lot of it was, and it was kind of like it was described kind of as a divorce, and I think they were getting back at each other for, you know, what had happened and who had caused what and those types of things early after the Beatles broke up, really mainly over the first three years or so after the Beatles broke up. But there has been a little bit of an ongoing battle sometimes here and there from comments that Yoko would make and things that Yoko would do. And so that's also kept it a little fresher even in the modern day. But I think just you can see when I just mentioned about John and Paul trying to get back together several times, you know, and Paul showed up at a recording session in 1974, John in Los Angeles, and, you know, and they talked about getting back together then, and they almost did again several other times, that, you know, that it's been buried to a large degree, even though there were times when it was low because John was still going through some difficult times, went through some depression in the period from 1975 to 1980 when he didn't have any, you know, music released at all. But no, I think it died down. I think they really loved each other. But, you know, it's like when you go through a divorce that there's, you know, there's some finger pointing and emotional hurt, and sometimes it's taken out on the other person. And I think sort of that's what they did in the first several years. And unfortunately, Yoko has helped revive it from time to time with various comments. But even that is
right. She just seemed to add fuel to the fire. That was almost the feeling I got.
Right.
You're obviously a huge Paul McCartney fan. How many times have you seen him live over the years?
It's 24, starting in 1976, and then there was a gap until 1989 because, of course, he broke up. Wings broke up in the 79-80 period, and so he really didn't have a group to go out with at the time. So that was part of it. And then, of course, John's assassination, you know, really scared all of them from really going out. And I think it took for a while for Paul to get back out there. And I think he also wanted to get out with what he considered a good tour album, which was Flowers in the Dirt in 1989. So, yeah, so it spread out from 1976 to 89 and early 90s, and then last year twice. And I'm hoping that I'll see him this year. I think he'll be back out. I think he'll have a new album out. He said he's working on one. And now one show I wish I had seen was the show that he did at the Apollo in December, because he changed the songs a bit, added four or five songs, and actually did a tribute to Marvin Gaye on the song Hitchhike. And it was a great version, even though it took him three tries because of technical difficulties to get it finished. It was a terrific performance. I actually have heard it, and it was a great thing for Paul to be there because he kept talking about what a tribute it was to be at the Apollo, and the reviews on his show were tremendous. And I think that's what I also want to say, and also maybe back up my whole premise of what I wrote about in both my books, that, you know, Paul continues to be out there with terrific music. It's not just that he's going out there and playing live. He has good music to play, good new music to play, and his performances are, you know, generally extremely well received, as this show was, that as one review says, he has an energetic young band with him, and it serves him well, and he looks almost like he did when he came out as a Beatle in 1964 on the Ed Sullivan Show. So he still putting it out there, and I do want to mention, because it's just, of course, happened this past weekend, that he won the Grammy Award for the Best Live Performance of Helter Skelter from the show DVD from the show in New York. And I think that's amazing for a guy that at the time was 67 years old to win an award for the best live performance. Really does show, I think, his tremendous ability, and for me, the, you know, most successful artist of all time.
Oh, I think it speaks volumes of his talent. You know, 67. He's no spring chicken, but he still knows how to put on a live concert.
He does, and Helter Skelter, obviously not the easiest song to sing. It's pretty loud, brash song, and for him to win the award for that from a song that was originally released in 1968 is really does, I think, show. And you and I have talked about this in the past, too, about staying, I guess overall strength of music and staying power that people have. And there's, I think you just got to put him out there. There's some other great people. I certainly, again, don't want to start an argument about that as either. That, there's Bob Dylan. There's so many people from the 60s and 70s, it seems to me, that, have this staying power and we're still hearing from them because their music was better and than what is offered up to us now. And I just think Paul's top of the list for all those people.
Have you ever met Paul McCartney?
No, I haven't. I thought I was going to have a chance once when I went to a show in Fort Lauderdale because I was friends with the manager of the building, but he told me that the security that they still has, is, and I think Paul's actually loosened up on that to some degree now, that he doesn't really keep bodyguards with him outside of, going to shows and events. I mean, just in his regular life, he has him as John Hamill, his assistant, is around most of the time, but really doesn't have a bodyguard otherwise, but there was still strong security, so that was probably my best chance, and I didn't. I'm hoping that he has gotten a copy of the book, so. Books, and I'm hoping sometime maybe he would contact me and say, okay, well, if we're going to get so and so show, maybe there'll be a way to meet him. But
Maybe he's listening right now.
That would be perfect. that would be another entry possibly. But I am hoping to see him again. That 24 times was great. Seen a lot of different songs over the years. Obviously done every show has just been phenomenal. He gives you everything he's got for. And he's out there singing every song for two and a half hours, 2 hours and 45 minutes. Obviously a number of Beatles songs are on the list, but it's just an absolutely fantastic show. He really, I actually, as you know, in this last book I wrote about, I went to Soundcheck in Charlotte and got to hear just how he prepares for the show. And his attention to detail really, I think also accents that he wants those shows to be absolutely as good as they possibly can, even after having done all these shows over all these years.
A non-Beatles question for you. When you're not listening to the Beatles and, the solo musicians, who else do you like to listen to?
Over the years, I don't really listen to mainstream radio too much because I just don't hear things that I like. I still probably, most of my music is probably, 60s, 70s, 80s, Billy Joel, Elton John. I can go back to all the great groups back from then, the Turtles, and just for one off the top of my head, Badfinger. I'll probably still stay with those. I can't really name you, I don't know if I could name you 10 songs over the last 10 years I really thought were that good. A new group that I've listened to called the Pond Hawks are really got a nice little mix of a little bit of Wings, a little bit of McCartney, a little bit of their own style. I think their first CD is called The Pond Hawks Have Landed, and it's a nice mix of excellent vocals and some kind of strange effects, almost Beatles Revolver album like effects to some degree. So it's kind of neat that they kind of throw that back in. Could you? Probably didn't really see too much of that after the Beatles did it because they themselves always tried to do something different, I think, from album to album for the most part. So that's one probably of modern time that I bought, but I think we agree on this point to some degree.
Oh,
not that
indeed.
Much great out there. And I think also music sales seem to verify that fact that there's just not that much interest in today's music.
Right. And actually, there are some truly, truly interesting performers, but you know, they just don't get the kind of airplay as the junk. In fact, I've got a little quiz for you. I'm gonna play part of a track. I'd like you to comment on where you think the inspiration might have come from. I'm sure you'll find it.
Where the heart of the night meets the dark of the street.
That's right.
We are happy to know we are bending the light when we dance in the glow. Not everything cares to see, but there are some things that even the wind must believe.
Right.
Everything's over too soon. If you want to wish big, baby, wish on the moon. Soul with a rhyme and a prayer and a rhythm to keep me in time. I don't know what the morning will bring to the people who dream the impossible things.
Midnight.
We are lucky to meet where the heart of the night meets the dark of the street.
Midnight.
We are happy to know we are bending the light when we dance in the glow.
Midnight.
Not everything can be deceived, but there are some things that even the wind must believe.
Midnight.
Everything's over too soon. If you want to wish big, baby, wish on the moon. And they hope that somebody is singing along. I don't know if that matters to you, but you never can tell what a song can do. We are lucky to meet where the heart of the night meets the dark of the street. We are happy to know we are bending the light when we dance in the glow.
Ow.
Okay. Name
that
office.
I got a long list of influence. To me, it started out with a little bit of Wings musically, and then the vocal, to me, sounded more like Paul Simon to some degree.
Oh, but yeah, I mean, that was the first track off an album called The Man with the Time Machine. It's by a musician, Jamie Michaels, and I was interviewing the guy the following day, and so I grabbed the CD and I gave it to Jan, my wife, and I said, "Pop this on the player because I really need to listen to it, you know, because I'm talking to this guy tomorrow." And she put it in, and that started playing, and I just looked at her. I said, "That's the wrong CD." it is so much like Under African Skies off Paul Simon's Graceland album.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so you agree with me. But I will say, in addition to that, I also, some of the harmonies remind me of both of Wings and a little bit, just a small taste of John and Paul. And I will say that over the years, and Paul, I think when he worked with Elvis Costello, a little bit with one or two other people as time went on with the group, with his Wings and other groups that he played with, that I miss those harmonies. You know, I thought there were some nice little touches of harmonies in that song as well, that both were, again, Simon and Garfunkel to some degree, somewhat John and Paul, actually somewhat even Wings there. I thought I might have heard a female's voice in there. Was that right?
The backing group.
Remind me a little bit maybe more of Linda when she was singing on key.
Right. I had a lot of fun with that track.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of tribute bands out there. Do you have a personal favorite?
I do, and I do try to go see as many Beatle tribute bands as I have. I've only seen one. You'll be interested in this. I've only seen one Paul McCartney tribute band, and I got really excited because it was close by, And I know there's some out there I've seen, but none of them, at least I haven't known of, being close to here. But the one Paul McCartney tribute band I went to see was so bad that I actually left during the show. So that was really disappointing. However, nearly all of the Beatle tribute bands I've seen are good. Rain puts on a great show, 1964. Beatlemania, the various factions of that have become together locally here, and I truly enjoy them. I've seen them numerous times. A group called the Glass Onion Band. Now they don't get into the actual costumes and all the different phases of different years and things like that, and all the different special effects that other groups try to put in with, you know, using an Ed Sullivan lookalike to introduce the group, I think, is what one of the group does. But musically, I think they are as comparable to any group that's out there. I think they really appreciate the music, and it's got kind of a combination of two young guys and one 40s guy and two in their 50s, and so it's kind of an interesting makeup of the group. But they I've been to a couple of their practices as well, so I've gotten to know them, and they put the attention and appreciation to that music like as well as any group that I've seen. So fortunately, they are local. They're in Sarasota, so I do get to see them quite a bit.
Do any of these tribute bands actually record the music? You know, sell CDs?
Yes, some did. There was a group back originally, the first Beatle tribute band that I think I ever saw was called the Sponge Tones. They're located in mainly in Charlotte, North Carolina, and they came out really with their own music not too long after they really started as a group and were mainly doing Beatles early in Sponge. Most meant to sponge off the sound of the Beatles was part of their group title, and they put out I think probably at least a half dozen CDs over time, including one I think last year. They're an excellent group. I hope, you know, people might want to research that if they enjoy hearing Beatle-like groups that have done their own type of stuff, because I think that's a great place to start.
I think it's time for some absolutely shameless commercialization. Where can people buy copies of your books?
Well, they are located, of course, on the regular sites that people would see, like Amazon. However, if they really want a special treat with special bonus items and comparable pricing, they can go to my site, and I hope the site doesn't upset people like it sometimes does, but it's betterthanlinen.com, and I autograph the books and a couple other special gifts with it and get it right to them. So, and they can also go to the site. I kind of keep some ongoing information about. I put up a song of the month and other special information on there. So I think that's the absolute best place to go. BetterThanLennon.com.
Are you yourself a musician at all?
I was when I grew up. I wrote one song. I played in a band that had a couple different names, and I can remember actually getting screams and signing autographs at a talent show. But it sort of died out. I'm not sure why. I guess it's just the time. You know, it was the 60s. It was probably 66, 67 time frame, somewhere in there. And, you know, we played, I think, Twist and Shout. That seemed to always get the Beatles version seemed to always get the crowd excited. So I was into that. It was great, and I do miss it. And, you know, I think when I go to these live shows, particularly some of these local bands, you know, I've always kind of thought, you know, I should get up there and sing with them, because I did sing a bit. But I miss it, but also I recognize sometimes probably that my talents were maybe had a lower limit than was necessary to get into a good group.
All right. What you're saying is you don't consider yourself quite as good as Paul McCartney.
No, not quite there. Maybe if I'd stuck with it, I would have maybe felt better about my talents, but I didn't, you know, and it's too bad because I think it's great fun. You know, I rarely go, and I've been, like I said, I've been to the Glass Onion Band's practices just to see their great appreciation for the music, and I think I have that. I have that part, maybe not the talent to go along with it.
Right. And actually, one of these days, I am going to reconvene the you know, the Let's Beat Up on John Cherry and Simon Barrett panel. if you feel up for that.
I do. It was great because you brought in, you know, very knowledgeable people, and I think we've discussed the possibility of adding, you know, some others that I think would thoroughly enjoy it. They seem to have a good time with it. They seem enthused when they're on the show, and I learned a lot. I don't really mind the criticisms from time to time, as long as I have a chance to rebut whatever is said, whether I have a good rebuttal or not. I think we had a great discussion. I think we all learned a lot that day.
Oh, there was no question about that. I spent a good deal of the time just sort of absorbing the information.
Well, yeah. You really did have. You can talk about some of the people that you've had on there, or if we get into another show. But that was really what helped make it for me. I think my knowledge of what I had written about, added some depth. Their knowledge of the music business itself was tremendous, and also a different perspective because they were great musicians and they could see maybe deeper into the music than probably I did. So I think it complemented. While there was a little bit of some food fighting going on from time to time, it still I think overall really presented a kind of a full scope, in depth look at both Paul and John, the Beatles, et cetera. And, I think by the response that you got that people seemed quite interested in.
Oh, indeed. We're almost out of time, but at the very beginning of our discussion, you mentioned that you're currently working on a book. It's not Beatles-oriented. Can you tell us just a little bit about it?
Well, it did help lead into my first McCartney book a little bit. It was titled War on Us, us being kind of a playoff on U.S., how policies and people are destroying America. And it wasn't just political issues. It got into things like music. I had a chapter, actually probably part of a second chapter, on music itself. And I'm kind of making the point of how music was being destroyed by mainstream radio to some degree, and just by the fact that just the talent wasn't out there for new artists, or they weren't getting play, like you said, because I think there's a tremendous amount of talent out there still. They just don't get the exposure they need, and which I think is dreadfully unfair. Fortunately, there's other outlets now like you that can give these people their chance. But I'll cover probably all kinds of different subjects. I'm sitting here right now with research that's piling up here in my kitchen office area of all these different subjects that we'll get into, which goes anywhere from road rage to health care, to religion, to education, to immigration. Music will be in there, talk about television. So I think it will have something for everybody, immigration, the media, everything's going to be in that. So I'm hoping to have it out this summer. And as we talked about, I think we'll need about a 5-series show with different panels, because I think there'll be that many people that might want to get in on it. But at this point, the working title is what has happened to our country? War on Us Part 2. So that's what I'm working on right now, and it's fun to write when you get into all the subject, but the research is really piling up in here, so I really need to do something with it, get it on paper.
Well, it certainly sounds like you're keeping yourself busy.
I do, and you read my first book. I think you got a chuckle or two out of it. I always try to throw in a little humor here and there. A lot of what I say, and I know you appreciate this because you're maybe a little bit of a mixer like I am, that some of it's just tongue in cheek, just to sort of create discussion, and that's fun. And I'll be doing that as well in this book, so it'll still have some humor thrown in there. If you know me, you probably get it better, and I think maybe you got some of my little shots and points where I was just trying to make fun of different things. So There's always going to be that in there, which I think that keeps it interesting.
Oh, indeed. Well, I for one am looking forward to your next endeavor. I'm sure it will be entertaining. John,
I'm gonna do my best.
John, we are out of time here. My producer is whining in my ear. I do want to thank you for taking time out to talk with us this morning, and I want to wish you every success with your past endeavors and your future endeavors.
Thank you, Simon. Always a pleasure. And again, betterthanlinden.com. You can always just comment and make comments about the book, but I hope people will visit that site and get either one or both of these two books that I've written about Paul.
They're both well worth reading.
Thank you very much.
This is Simon Barrett for bloggernews.net, wishing everyone a happy and safe day, and we will be back on the air sometime soon. Till next time, goodbye.